turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 6. Daniel, chapter 6, we'll read verses 1 through 11. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king, and said thus unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute, and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not." Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. The book of Daniel, of course, in chapter 1, opens with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, conquering Judah. The record of that is found in 2 Kings chapter 24. And in 2 Kings 24 and verse 14, we see that 10,000 of the most promising of Judah were carried into Babylonian captivity. Daniel, of course, would have been one of these 10,000. In addition to these 10,000 being taken captive, we read in Daniel 1 and verse 2 that the temple had been raided and ransacked, and the vessels of the temple were taken and placed in the house of one of Nebuchadnezzar's idolatrous gods. Nebuchadnezzar's plan was to take these Hebrews, and he took those he thought to be the most gifted, the most learned, and his intent was to brainwash them, to re-educate them, to transform them into Babylonian thinking, and send them back into Judah, making them agents of the Babylonian Empire. And then, of course, Nebuchadnezzar would govern them as his loyal subjects. But before Nebuchadnezzar could train these individuals, or transform these individuals, he knew he had to change their thinking. He knew they had to get them to act, to think like Babylonians. And we see there in chapter 1, to accomplish this, he did several things. In verse 4, they were taught the way, and this went on for 3 years, they were taught the ways and the philosophy and the religion of Babylonian culture. He, again, was seeking to get them to have a different way of looking at life. They were then taught the language of the Babylonians were really they were taught the language of the Chaldeans. They were taught the language of the most educated of the people. They were also introduced to the luxuries of Babylon. We see that in Daniel 1 and verse 5. So he's seeking to entice them. He's seeking to develop an appetite for Babylonian things. Again, changing their lifestyle. In verse 6 of Daniel chapter 1, we're introduced to four of these captives. We have Daniel and then the three Hebrews. And in verse 7, we're told that their names were all changed. And this, of course, was simply an attempt to get them to forget their country, to get them to forget their upbringing, to get them to forget their God, leading them to identify with Babylon. And again, these things went on for 3 years. They were indoctrinated in pagan Babylonian thinking. But in spite of all the evil intentions of Nebuchadnezzar, and in spite of the intense effort of the enemy, we find great encouragement for you and I in Daniel. We see in Daniel 1 and verse 8 that while all this was going on, even before it was going on, as Daniel was being carried into captivity, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. That is, Daniel determined that he would not be moved from his God. He made it his intention, it was his aim, it was his object, it was his goal, it was his ambition, his determination that he was going to please God and not the culture that was now surrounding him. So Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not be blinded by Babylonian culture, by Babylonian thinking, that he would not be hypnotized by Babylonian thinking. He purposed in his heart, that is, it was his resolve not to be defined by this culture of wickedness that he now found himself in, this culture of rebellion and idolatry. So he was determined. He was resolved. He was committed not to allow his affections, his devotion, his loyalty to God to be turned aside. And he was determined that he would not go along with the whole Babylonian program, that he would not go along with this godless culture that he was now in. Again, Daniel's own country, Daniel's own homeland is basically lies in waste, and he's now in a land that is very antagonistic toward his faith. He's living in an evil culture. He's been uprooted. Everything in his life has been changed. He's surrounded by difficulties and troubles. No doubt there was sorrow. No doubt there was heartache and probably even anguish. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. So it was his purpose, it was his intent to remain associated with God, to remain connected to God, and that God would continue to be the emphasis of his life. And in coming to Daniel chapter 6, by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, it's been 60 plus years since the captivity. 60 plus years since Daniel has been carried off into Babylon. And when you come to Daniel chapter 6, we see Nebuchadnezzar no longer, and we see that Babylon has been conquered, and Darius is now over the kingdom. The Medes and the Persians have conquered Babylon. And we again, Darius is over the kingdom. This is seen in verses 1 through 3. He is seen there organizing his government, and he notices that this man Daniel has an excellent spirit in him. So he, in organizing his government, he thought, I'm going to make this man, I'm going to set him over the whole realm. And this, of course, enraged the other government leaders, and they, in verses 4 and 5, sought to bring Daniel down. But they couldn't find anything. They couldn't find anything in his life to charge him with. And there's a message there, of course. But knowing Daniel's connection to God, they knew Daniel had a connection to his God. They knew Daniel was closely associated with his God. And they knew Daniel was a man of prayer. And knowing these things, and again, that just again shows the testimony that Daniel had amongst these individuals. But knowing these things about Daniel, they persuaded Darius. They knew that Darius was a very self-centered individual, that he was a man who wanted the glory. So they presented a decree to Darius that no one could ask, could petition any god in the land except for Darius. Well, that of course made Darius feel pretty good, and he signed the decree. And then in verse 10 and 11, where we want to take our message from, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being opened in his chamber, a portion of his house, toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. This isn't something that Daniel just started doing because of the decree. The individuals that persuaded Darius to sign this decree, to put this decree in force, knew that Daniel was a man of prayer. And they knew that the decree would not stop him. And they knew that this was their only opportunity to bring Daniel down. So for 60 plus years, this has been the habit of Daniel. And again, it was, I'm sure, his habit when he was in Judah as well. But we're just concentrating on Babylon. For 60 plus years in Babylon, this has been the habit of Daniel. And I believe this is how he maintained his purpose of heart. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And what kept him strong, what kept him steadfast, was he had this habit of communing with God, with praying to God. So as you look at verse 10, you picture Daniel in a room, in a chamber, in his house. It tells us the windows are open. And the windows are open toward Jerusalem. Jerusalem is almost 800 miles away. And the reason the windows are open toward Jerusalem is that's who Daniel is praying for. But there's Daniel. He's upon his knees, and he's praying, and he's making supplication before his God. And Daniel here is set before us as an example. The windows being open is indicative of the fact that in spite of the decree being passed, Daniel was courageous. And Daniel was not ashamed to get on his knees before God. The windows being open toward Jerusalem is also indicative of him praying for his own homeland. We're going to speak tonight on keep your windows open. Keep your windows open. That is, like Daniel, remain courageous, be unashamed, and pray. And we see Daniel is our example. So what we read here in verse 10 and verse 11, these two verses tells us much about Daniel. First of all, as we've already seen, as he did aforetime, this was a habit of Daniel. It was a habit of Daniel to get on his knees before God and pray. In other words, Daniel had a prayer life. He had a prayer life. This was not something that he would just do occasionally. This was something he did every day. He would get on his knees and pray. We see he did it three times a day. In spite of everything else that Daniel had to do, and he had many responsibilities in the kingdom, Daniel found time to pray. Prayer was a central and major part of his life. It was a very significant part of his life. So there he is, on his knees, praying, and it says he's giving thanks. Again, keep in mind, he's in the midst of a captivity, some 800 miles away from his homeland, and he's giving thanks. He's giving thanks unto God. And again, this was his routine. This was normal for Daniel. This was the impulse of Daniel. This was the instinct of Daniel. His life was marked by prayer. So, 60 plus years did not change this habit of Daniel. 60 plus years of captivity, 60 plus years of being away from family and his loved ones did not change his habit of prayer. Nor did a decree from Darius the king change his habit. So we must make personal examination. To what extent is our life characterized by prayer? How natural is it for us to pray? How natural is it for us to get on our knees before God and pray? So, there's Daniel. He has a habit of prayer. This says a lot of things about Daniel. So, there he is. He's upon his knees. He's praying. He's making supplication. Prayer, of course, is a matter of the heart. And again, this was his practice. This is what was normal routine for Daniel. And it continued to be so through 60 plus years of captivity. It continued to be so in spite of a prohibitive decree from the king. And all of this speaks of the condition of Daniel's heart. Again, he had purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And the fact that he continued this habit of prayer speaks much of his condition of heart. He no doubt prayed from a heavy heart. He no doubt prayed from a burdened heart. He no doubt prayed with great love and great concern and passion. But through 60 plus years of captivity, his love, his concern, his passion did not waver. And he remained tender toward God. If you're going to continually pray, you have to have a tender heart toward God. Prayer will make your heart tender, and tenderness of heart will lead you to pray. So in these very adverse circumstances, Daniel still had a very tender heart toward the Lord. So again, there he is. He's upon his knees. He's praying. He's making supplication. Prayer is a drawing near unto God. We're not talking about just saying some words. We're talking about praying. And any time we truly pray, there is a drawing near unto God. So there's Daniel upon his knees. And twice, we are told, once in verse 10 and once in verse 11, he is on his knees before his God. It doesn't just say he's on his knees praying, but he is on his knees before his God. That is, he has entered into the very presence of God. And that's what real prayer is. Real prayer is entering into the very presence of God. And as he is before his God, there was a personal awareness that God was there. Daniel was being drawn to God. And again, this was his practice, this was his routine, this was his norm. It was a normal thing for Daniel to be drawn to God every single day. Three times a day, he would fall on his knees before God, enter into the presence of the Lord. And 60 plus years of captivity did not change this. He continued this practice. Again, we must ask ourselves, to what extent is our life marked? To what extent is our life characterized by our hearts being drawn to God in prayer? Look at our everyday lives. How often are we drawn to God? How often do we feel a pull toward God to fall on our knees, being in the presence of God, and pray and make supplication and give thanks? And again, Daniel continued to do this through 60 plus years of captivity. I don't see discouragement in Daniel. Because if you have a habit of prayer like this, you don't have time to get discouraged. Prayer will keep you out of discouragement. And so we see there he is, upon his knees, praying and making supplication. Prayer is realizing that we are weak. It is realizing that we are ignorant, that we have need. But it also realizes that God is an absolute sovereign. And that God, it realizes God's greatness. It realizes God's authority and power. And all of this, realizing our own need and realizing that God has what we need, causes us to take our proper place before God. We'll have no problem praying. And we'll have no problem taking our place before God when we realize our need. And when we realize that God is what we need. And when we realize those things, we will take a place of submission. Again, he's on his knees before his God. He's in a place of submission. And again, this was his routine. This was his norm. This was the impulse of his heart. And 60 plus years of captivity did not change this in Daniel. So there's Daniel. He's upon his knees. He's praying. He's making supplication. Prayer is a longing for God. Prayer is a seeking of God. Prayer is a worshiping of God. So there's Daniel. Upon his knees, he's longing for God. He's seeking God. He's worshiping the Lord. And again, this was his norm. This was his routine. And again, 60 plus years of captivity did not change Daniel's routine. Also, again, we see he's upon his knees. He's praying. He's making supplication. Prayer is a focus upon God. And that's what he's doing here. He's before his God. He's praying. He's making supplication. He's giving thanks. He is focused upon God. Prayer is a communion with God. It is fellowship with God. It's contact with God. All prayer is contact. It's making contact with the Lord. And through 60 plus years of captivity, Daniel maintained his focus upon God. Think about that. 60 years. That's a long time to be captive. That's a long time to be away from home. That's a long time to be away from everything that you're familiar with. That's a long time to be away from loved ones. 60 plus years. Today, something happens and people get all upset and they can't pray for 2 weeks because they're so upset. And they get so discouraged. 60 plus years, Daniel kept praying every day, falling upon his knees before the Lord. It also speaks of the fact that he believed in God. Prayer is an expression of belief and trust in God. That Daniel prayed shows that he had personal assurance He was personally persuaded. He was personally convicted. He had confidence that God was living and that God was able. He had confidence that God was the Most High and that God was righteous and that God was gracious, that God was merciful, that God was loving, that God was caring, that God was faithful. He had conviction and assurance that God was sustaining, that God could sustain him, and that God was all sufficient, and that God was the emancipator, and that if they were ever going to be set free, it was God who was going to have to do it. And he knew that God was his only hope. So he prayed. And when we realize that God is our only hope, and we realize that God is gracious, and God is merciful, and God is loving and caring and sustaining, you'll pray. You'll pray. And this belief was in him deeply. So he prayed. And this was his practice. This was his routine. This was his norm. And 60 plus years of captivity did not change Daniel's faith in God. And he continued. He continued to pray. So there's Daniel. He's surrounded by the heathen. Everywhere he turns, there's the heathen. There's heathen images everywhere throughout Babylon. Babylon was saturated with heathen worship, heathen talk, heathen ways, heathen people. And there he is, living in a godless, God-despising, idolatrous, blasphemous, immoral, self-indulgent, self-sufficient culture. There he is. He's constantly surrounded by all of these things. And his windows are open. He's courageous. He's unashamed. And he's upon his knees, praying and making supplication. After 60 plus years, he's still identified with God and still unashamed to be identified with God. This is a beautiful picture. What we see here in verse 10 is a beautiful picture. We need to try to picture it in our minds. It's a very encouraging picture. Upon his knees, before his God, praying and making supplication. This is where Daniel found strength. This is where he found strength. This is where he found help. This is where he found peace. This is where he found assurance. He had faith. But every time he prayed, his faith was strengthened. This is where he found relief. Daniel had many difficult days, but he found relief upon his knees before his God, praying. It's where you and I will find relief also. This is where Daniel found comfort. It's where he found guidance. It's where he found instruction. It's where he found wisdom. So there he is, upon his knees before God, praying and making supplication. This is how he kept his identity with God. He had a habit of prayer. This is how he remained steadfast. This is how he did not sink into the depths of discouragement. He had a prayer life, and nothing caused him to waver in that prayer life. So there, we learned some things about Daniel from verse 10. But there's also encouragement here for you and I. So there's Daniel, knowing the decree has been signed. It says in verse 10, "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed." So there he is. He knows of the decree. He's in his house. He goes into a particular chamber. It's where he always went to pray. He had that place. We all need that place. His windows were opened. He's facing his homeland, Jerusalem. Can't see it. It's some 800 miles away. But there he is, unashamed, courageously upon his knees before God, praying and making supplication. What an encouraging picture for you and I. For you and I that live today in a world that is really very similar to Babylon. We live in a God-despising society, a God-despising culture. We live in a society and culture where almost everything is opposed to God. And we are surrounded by the heathen, just like Daniel was. We are surrounded by humanism, which goes very much in line with Babylonian thinking. And we are surrounded by perverted and twisted philosophies and ideas, just as Daniel was. But we look upon Daniel, and there he is upon his knees before God, praying and making supplication. Oh, may that be us. Oh, that would be God's people today. Everyone realizes, or at least they give lip service to it, that yes, we are in a very difficult time. We're getting too close to the end. But I don't believe there's a whole lot of people that's really gripped. Because if it really grips us, we'll find ourselves like Daniel. We'll have a habit, not just uttering a few words, but getting on our knees before God and praying. And just like Daniel, that's where we'll find strength. That's where we'll find refreshment. That's where we'll find guidance. That's where we'll find wisdom. So all that this would be us in this picture. That this would be each one of us in this picture. We're in a very pressing and desperate time. We're in a world that is filled with things that are broken. All around us are things that are broken. Marriages are broken. Families are broken. Churches are broken. Lives are broken. On and on we can go. But all around us is that which is broken and that which is shattered. We live in a world of upheaval. World of chaos, filled with misery, filled with distress. And oh, may this be us in this picture. Upon our knees before God, praying and making supplication. Every one of us here has burdens. Every one of us here has concerns. We need to get into our chambers. And we need to have the window open. That is, be unashamed and be courageous and fall on our knees before God and pray and make supplication. Why? Because there is a God. There is a God who is almighty. There is a God who is able to do exceedingly, abundantly above all that we ask or think. And because of that, we ought to fall down on our knees before Him and pray and pray and pray. And nothing should change that. Nothing at all. We have a God who is greater than anything in our life. Greater than any burden, greater than any problem, greater than any difficulty. There is a God who uses the few. There is a God who uses the feeble. And therefore, we ought to be on our knees praying. It ought to be our habit. It ought to be our instinct. When we hear something that upsets us, it ought to be our instinct to fall on our knees before God and pray. That ought to be our instinct. That ought to be the first thing we do. It shouldn't be the last thing we do. Yet that's how it is most of the time. People try everything else, and then when that doesn't work, God's our last resort. God ought to be our first resort. And it ought to be our instinct to fall on our knees, to take our place before God and to pray. There's a God. There is a God who can still bring down mighty walls. There is a God who can still topple giants. There is a God who can still deliver. There is a God who's still a hiding place from the wind. There is a God who's still a covert from the tempest. There is a God who's still like rivers of water in a dry place, and like the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. And because of all of this, it ought to be our instinct to fall on our knees and pray before the Lord. There is a God who gives power to the faint. Do you ever feel like fainting? Do you ever feel like giving up? We all do. But it ought to be our instinct, knowing that there is a God who gives power to the faint. It ought to be our instinct to be drawn to Him and receive that power. There is a God who still is able to open rivers in high places, who is still able to open fountains in the midst of valleys, who can still make the wilderness a pool of water, and can still cause springs to spring forth in dry land. And therefore we ought to fall upon our knees and pray. There is still a God who shepherds us. There's still a God who has green pastures. He knows where every one of them are. There's still a God who has still waters. There's still a God who can lead in right paths. There's still a God who can walk with us through the valley of the shadow of death. There's still a God who can spread a table before us in the presence of our enemies. And there's still a God who can anoint us with oil until our cups run over. And because of all of that, it ought to be our instinct to fall on our knees before Him and pray. There is still a God who restores souls. We all need restoring. We all know people that need restoring. And it ought to be our instinct to fall on our knees and plead with God to save sinners, to plead with God to restore lives, to plead with God to put back together that which is broken, as only He can. It ought to be our instinct. It ought to be what we just do naturally. There's still a God who gives victory. There's still a God who's a miracle-working God. For all the messes, for all the messes of life, there's still a God who can work miracles. And we ought to fall on our knees before Him. There is a God who is all wise. He knows everything. He knows everything that you're going to experience tomorrow, 5 years from now, if you're still here. He knows everything. He knows the very moment that you're going to leave this life. He knows every problem that you're going to face. He's all wise. And He has everything that we need. If we have any sense at all, we would fall on our knees before Him. And this would be our habit. So again, as you read verse 10, you get this picture. And oh, may that picture be of us. That it would be of us. That we would be in that picture. Again, see Daniel. He's upon his knees. He's before God. Again, it's not enough just to get on our knees. We need to get before God. We need to get in the presence of God. Far too many times people stop in their mere words before they get into the presence of God. There's a big difference. Get in the presence of the Lord, upon his knees before God. What a wonderful picture. Praying and making supplication. And this was his life. This was his daily routine. This was normal. This was his instinct and his impulse, was to pray. Was to pray. The instinct of many today is to get on their cell phone and call somebody. I'll tell you what, you do a lot better if before you make any phone calls, just get on your knees before God and pray. And before you discuss matters with anybody, get on your knees before God and pray. We'd all be better off if this was the instinct of each one of us to fall on our knees before God. And when we hear of a brother or sister that's struggling in the faith, again, don't get on the cell phone, but fall on our knees before God and pray for them. We need to be a praying people. And I do believe that this is how Daniel kept steadfast in Babylon, because he had this prayer life. And that's where he received the strength that he needed, the instruction, the guidance. It's where he received everything that he needed. And all this needs to be us today. So again, read verse 10 over and over. And can we put ourselves in that picture? Can we put ourselves in Daniel chapter 6 in verse 10? That's a good place to live. Daniel 6 in verse 10. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.